You are listening to Radio Aryan for an alternative to the anti-white system. On RadioAryan.com.
Hello once again, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, and welcome to the Rope Report, Billy's Balkanization broadcast, no longer brought to you exclusively on the Billy Roper YouTube channel, but now partnering with Radio Aryan. That's right, for the last few months, you've only been able to hear the Rope Report on the Billy Roper YouTube channel, but now with our new partnership with Radio Aryan, you can listen twice a day to the live simulcast on RadioAryan.com of the Rope Report. You can also find the Rope Report previous broadcast in the archives at RadioAryan.com, as well as download them directly to your computer from RadioAryan.com and listen to them on their own YouTube channel. So now there are many more ways for many thousands more people to be red-pilled and white-pilled through the Rope Report, just as you have been. And since we're going to be having this initial premiere broadcast of the Rope Report, which is carried on RadioAryan.com and reaching many more people who have never heard of the Shieldwall Network or about the Rope Report before, I'd like to take just a few minutes to tell them that they can find every day, daily updated news and political commentary articles, which you will not find anywhere else on the Rope Report blog and websites, as well as the Shieldwall Network website. The Shieldwall Network website is theshieldwallnetwork.wordpress.com, and there are two The Rope Report blogs, theropereportsite.wordpress.com and theropereport.whitenationalist.com. Or you can just Google The Rope Report to find either of those blogs, and Google The Shieldwall Network and Billy Roper to find the Shieldwall Network website. You are all aware that there is a glut of white nationalist organizations in this movement of ours. And so you may be asking yourself, why do we need another movement? Why do we need another organization? Well, the truth is the Shieldwall Network is not a typical membership organization per se. We do not collect dues and we don't wear uniforms. We encourage you, not discourage you, to get involved with other organizations of your choice, which match your personal and specific political and religious views. But the Shieldwall Network is something completely different and completely new. Like the Cover Our People With Love charity and the other operations that we carry out through the Shieldwall Network, it was engendered originally out of need. Necessity is the mother of invention. And frankly, we looked around and saw that there was a vacuum, something that was not being supplied through the white nationalist movement, something that was needed, that was not being done, and we decided that since no one else was doing it, that we would. Now, the reason why the Shieldwall Network was conceptualized to begin with is based on my theory of Balkanization. I'm not saying that Billy Roper coined the term or the phrase Balkanization. Of course, it refers back to the Yugoslavian Civil War of the 1990s and even before then, when, if you remember correctly, World War I began through the different competing ethnicities of Southeastern Europe fighting for control of that little chunk of territory, and one of them, a Serbian nationalist, shooting Archduke Franz Ferdinand of the Austro-Hungarian Empire in a bid for Serbian independence. And then the system of entangling alliances led to the First World War, which led to the Second. But rather than talk about the geographic origin of the term Balkanization, I'd like to refresh you on the political meaning of the term. Balkanization is what happens when a multiracial or multi-ethnic empire or democracy breaks up into more racially homogeneous ethnostates. Now, that term ethnostate is one which many of you, even on the alt-right, neophyte, newbie level, should be familiar with. It means a nation, in the organic sense of the term, in the original sense of the term nation, of those who share a common ancestry, a common origin, racially, genetically, through their DNA, where it really matters most.
Deutschland, die Heil! Deutschland, die Heil! Deutschland, die Heil! Deutschland, die Heil! Deutschland, die Heil!
The United States of America no longer qualifies as a nation in the original sense of the term. It is a multiracial quasi-democracy. It's really a multiracial empire. But this glorious multiracial empire, which far too many believe is too big to sink, just like the Titanic was, is headed for destruction. The United States of America was frankly born in bloody revolution, and it's going to die that way as well. I'm sure that if I could sit one-on-one with each of you listening to my voice and talk to you about the demographic changes which are happening in this country, you, like me, would soon understand that the United States of America, as we know it, is not going to continue to exist for the remainder of even our lifetimes if we all lived a natural lifespan. The United States of America was founded by white nationalists, of and for white nationalists. All the founding fathers, by today's definition of the term, would be white nationalists. They said specifically that they were forming the United States government to secure the blessings of liberty for themselves and their posterity. That means their descendants, not the posterity of Asia or Africa or Mexico. And they went even further than that when they specifically stated in one of the first laws they passed in the Naturalization Act of 1790 that only whites could immigrate to the United States of America and become citizens. And to double down on that, 5 years later, just to prove it wasn't a one-time accident, they passed the Naturalization Act of 1795, which said that only white people of good moral character could immigrate to the United States and become citizens. At that time, only heterosexual white Americans were legally citizens of the United States. In several of the first 13 colonies, which became the first 13 states, as a matter of fact, homosexuality was a capital crime, punishable by death. In all of them, it was illegal and a felony. And Thomas Jefferson, the author of the Declaration of Independence, proposed that homosexuality, when he was governor of Virginia, should be punishable by castration. These, our founding fathers, were by no stretch of the imagination liberals. And so even before the first 10 amendments, what we think of as our Bill of Rights, had been ratified and tacked on to the brand new Constitution, even before they had created a standing army, even before they had established a gold reserve and created a uniform currency which was universally accepted throughout the nation, they thought it was extremely important to say specifically that only whites could become citizens of this new country they were forming. So it wasn't a last bastion of implicit white racism. It wasn't just the implied ethnic commonality of the European Americans who founded this nation. No, They specifically, by law, said that only whites could be citizens of the United States. We have fallen. We have slipped since then, and that's no longer the case. But we should remember the original intent of our founding fathers that this was to be a white republic, specifically and exclusively. Now, because it no longer is, because we have allowed it to cease to be, incrementally, gradually, it has become a multiracial empire. And the German philosopher Fred Nietzsche said that what cannot fly must fall. I believe that multiracial democracy cannot fly. Never before has multiracialism succeeded. All multiracial states, all multiracial empires, all multiracial democracies have collapsed or devolved into civil war, or they've been conquered by stronger outside neighbors. They have never been successful because different people want different things out of life, and that includes different groups of people, different ethnicities of people, different races of people as well. So the more homogeneous, the more similar genetically and ethnically a population is, the more likely they are all to get along because they have similar hopes and dreams and aspirations. They have similar abilities and similar needs. The more dissimilar they are, the more heterogeneous they are, the more likely there's going to be conflict. In the case of the prime recent example of the Balkans, that Balkanization happened when the artificial state of Yugoslavia broke apart in the 1990s in a bloody ethnic conflict that will look like a tea party compared to what we will see when the United States of America breaks apart. Right now, Americans of every hue and color are self-segregating. They're voluntarily migrating into their own ethnic enclaves. We used to call this white flight. Whenever the population of non-whites in a certain city or neighborhood reached a tipping point, wherever that tipping point percentage might be, whites would move out of that area to the suburbs, and sometimes the case would be that non-whites would follow them to those suburbs, and so whites would wait until it became unbearable, it reached another tipping point, and then those whites would white flight again from a suburb into a more rural area, and so now white Americans sometimes commute hours to get to work in cities that they would not live in because they are simply too third world, simply too non-white today.
Boy, baby. Boy, baby. Boy, baby. Boy, baby. Boy, baby. Boy, baby.
Many whites are no longer making those hours-long commutes to try to keep the infrastructure of these third-world cities going. Many of them are moving completely out of entire states. But we're not alone. It's not just that white people are moving out of California into Oregon and Washington and Wyoming to get away from the Mexicans who are taking over California. It's not just that white people are moving out of Mississippi and Louisiana to places like northern Arkansas, where I live, or that they're moving out of Georgia and Alabama to get away from blacks there, to go to Tennessee in the upper South. It's that other races are doing the same. New York City is losing African Americans. Chicago is losing African Americans because throughout the Northeast and throughout the Midwest, blacks are leaving these large urban centers and they are moving back to the Deep South, back to the former Dixie, the former Confederacy. And the Black Belt in the Deep South, stretching from the Mississippi River over to South Carolina in a broad swath, is getting broader, it's getting deeper, it's getting blacker. And white people are often moving into wider areas, which is natural and healthy human instinct. That's why those five states of Mississippi, Louisiana, South Carolina, Alabama, and Georgia are considered the new African Republic by many black nationalist and militant Nation of Islam members who are now taking over the local politics in those regions. In places like Jackson, Mississippi, where the new mayor of the 90% black state capital of Mississippi is an open black nationalist, whose father was the originator of the term the Republic of New Africa. And that's also true throughout Atlanta, and Montgomery, and Birmingham, and many other urban areas of that black belt, all the way up to Raleigh. That crescent-shaped black belt could form the Republic of New Africa. It may not stand. It may not last. It may be that blacks will prove they can't feed themselves or maintain even a third world nation of their own. But the reality is, when America goes down, those who think they're going to remain in Georgia or Alabama or Mississippi and fight for their little half-county white enclave when they're surrounded by wide and deep black regions, well, if they think they're going to be whistling Dixie, then my advice to them would be they'd better make it the short version, because whites were not able to maintain that kind of status quo in Rhodesia, which is now Zimbabwe, nor were they able to, as we're seeing now, in South Africa. As Hispanics continue to immigrate legally and illegally into the United States, and their birth rate exponentially eclipses the white birth rate, they're now becoming the majority, not just in New Mexico, but in Arizona and Southern Texas and Southern California, in that stretch of the southwestern corner of the United States, which they call Aztlan, which they say was taken from their ancestors, and which they say taking back is legitimately the Reconquista. White people are either dying off as those who used to live in Arizona because it was the Sun Belt and they moved from the colder north region to retire there, or they're, if they're able to, selling out and moving north. The Midwestern and Western regions of the United States, as well as the Upper South, are becoming more and more white by percentage because of white refugees moving out of the Deep South, especially the Southeast, and out of the Southwest, into the Upper South, into the Midwest and the West. That is the demographic reality, which is borne out by years of my personal census research and studying these population migrations, which are taking place voluntarily, folks. No one is holding a gun to anyone's head, at least not on TV, making them move, although many white people are escaping violence. And to be fair, so are many blacks who don't want to live in Chicago, for example, either. But these people are remigrating and clustering among their own. They're getting back to the roots, back to their ethnic and racial roots, and so are whites. You're seeing the formation of these three primary white and black and Hispanic nations in the United States of America, the Southeast becoming a new black nation, the Southwest becoming a new Hispanic nation, and the Midwest and Upper South and West becoming a new white nation, our, what I call, New America. I wrote extensively about the migrations based on demographic research and census data in my book, The Balk, B-A-L-K, which is available through Amazon Books as well as Lulu.com and through ebook form on Smashwords.com. It's also available through Barnes & Noble and Books A Million Booksellers. But The Balk, B-A-L-K, is a nonfiction study of this coming Balkanization of America. I know that's a big word. What it means is that multiracial democracy is doomed to fail within our lifetime. And when it does, there's going to be an unforeseeable but inevitable crisis trigger scenario which will lead to an abdication or vacuum of power by the federal government. I don't believe that any one state or group of states will successfully, legally, secede from the United States of America. But if there were, for example, economic collapses combined with a hacking attack on the grid or an external war, nuclear or otherwise, even conventional, or if there were massive terrorist attacks, or if there were just a rolling series of riots, imagine Ferguson in 20 cities at once for some reason that is unfathomable as anything else that blacks do, and the reaction and the backlash. Imagine if somewhere in San Antonio or Los Angeles, Hispanic activists lower the red, white, and blue flag in a sanctuary city which has become a sanctuary state because once Hispanics become a majority in a region, they're not going to support or obey or even allow any laws which will keep out the rest of their families or their cousins. They are already controlling regions as large as megalopolises, which are now sanctuary cities, and their sanctuary counties, and there are moves to make them sanctuary states. It's an incremental process of controlling city councils and then controlling state senators and then controlling state senates, and then they will be in control of the governor's houses and the National Guards and the state polices in those states. Those states, for example, California, New Mexico, and Arizona, will become de facto parts of Mexico already. When they formally lower the red, white, and blue flag and raise that green and white and red eagle eating the snake, if the federal government does not crush that revolt, if those in power are too liberal, too pro-Hispanic, too anti-racist to squash that, as they apparently are already too liberal and too weak to squash it, then they're not going to be able to tell African Americans who have been slaves for 400 years and suffered under Jim Crow and oppression and institutionalized racism, that the Hispanics have a right to their own internal nation state, their own sovereign territory based on their ethnicity, La Raza, total por La Raza, but that blacks do not. African Americans aren't going to accept that. They're already moving to and calling for the Republic of New Africa in the five states of the Deep South.
Eyes shining bright with unspilled tears, thinking about all those wasted years, when everything worth living for is gone. And brother, I find it hard to keep fighting on.
I'm not saying that some whites will not fight in the Southwest. I'm not saying that some whites will not fight, especially in the Southeast. But I am saying that even though it might not cleanly break along state lines, northern and central Texas may remain part of the white New America. Northern California may as well. northern Alabama, northern Georgia, and if it's able to withstand its borders as an ethnic enclave surrounded by New Africa, southern Mississippi, the Redneck Riviera, and the panhandle of Florida might also survive. But there is going to be ethnic conflict when America balkanizes. And I know that listening to me discuss these things, if you've never heard the concept before, and if you've never studied history as extensively as some of us have, it might seem like a pipe dream, it might seem like a fantasy, it might seem like some delusion, but the reality is, history is full of things, ladies and gentlemen, which happened, which no one thought would ever happen until they did, and then, you know, the next day, Monday morning, quarterbacking it, they seemed inevitable. And everyone said, oh, yeah, that had to happen that way. I knew that was going to come. The Titanic was too big to sink, wasn't it? The Berlin Wall was never going to come down without a nuclear war, was it? The Soviet Union would never be crushed without a fight, would it? And yet these things happened. No one, even the day before they happened, would have expected or predicted them. But now they're history. Every nation which has ever become a minority population within its geographic territory has always lost control of its political processes, as we have done. What I mean by that is that we are far beyond the point where white people, even if they had the will, could vote our way out of this mess. Because, frankly, even though we still are a thin majority, most white people have been too brainwashed and too browbeaten. They've been too cucked to ever vote for a white nationalist or even a nationalist, even a civic nationalist political party. Right now in Congress, with a Republican president and a Republican-controlled Senate and a Republican-controlled House of Representatives and a Republican conservative majority on the Supreme Court, even though we've only had universal socialized health care for a few years, there's not enough will to undo Obamacare. Even when it can be statistically proven that the majority of Americans theoretically would like to see Obamacare repealed, politicians are always looking for the results of that next election and that next donor. Now, we can talk in later shows about who controls political donations and to what degree the machines of both parties are interchangeable, like Tweedledum and Tweedledumber. But let me just say this for now. If voting could change anything, they would have already had made it illegal.
Don't try to speak to me about racial equality. Black and white are not the same. That's made by the communists and hammer the capitalists. Smash them both is my name. I hate strong scum. I hate strong scum. I put on the red flag. I hate coming scum. I hate strong scum. I hate strong scum. Reds are on the street tonight. Let's get that coming scum.
Promise. You're not going to bring back America by going to the ballot box. We're not going to vote our way out of this mess. We cannot, at this time, shoot our way out of this mess. The only two options for America's future, as whites continue to become closer and closer to being, and then eventually becoming, a minority, are either they, the establishment, the elite, those with the parentheses around their names, and their shabbosgoy servants, they will maintain control by becoming more and more authoritarian, more and more autocratic, holding their thumbs down on us harder and harder as we become more and more of a minority, and we'll have hate speech laws. Count on it. The internet will be shut down. Count on it. And eventually we'll be just like the South Africans. Or America will go down. We will not regain control of the federal government. We're not going to vote our way into taking control of a state government. Local organization, local meeting, and local networking is crucial because in order for our people to survive, when America goes down, and because of a grid collapse or an economic collapse or an external war or terrorist action or mass riots or just abdicating their own responsibility and power, just like King George III in Parliament did, which led to the first American Revolution, if you've read those 27 reasons why they did it in the Declaration, just like happened in 1775, we will have an opportunity when the federal government abdicates its power and says, no Hispanics, I'm not going to stop you from taking over the Southwest. Obviously, then citizenship will mean nothing. Patriotism will mean nothing anymore if it's that cheap, that can be bought and sold and given away that easily. And our nation will cease to be a nation. When the federal government abdicates that power, or it's taken away from the federal government through an external source which we can't foresee, then local community activists, those who have learned how through the Shield Wall Network and other efforts to become persons of influence in their communities, will be able to take control of resources and allocate assets on a local and county level. And by working together, we'll be able to create, give birth to, like a phoenix rising from the ashes of the old multiracial empire, a new America, a white, homogeneous ethnostate, just like the one that our founding fathers intended. Hopefully this time, God in heaven help us, we will get it right and not allow ourselves to be cucked again. We will pick our own damn cotton, we will pluck our own chickens, and we will count our own money. So the Shield Wall Network was created because no one was pushing for local organization at a grassroots community level that would teach people how to get involved and become persons of influence in their community. The Shield Wall Network was created because that needed to happen, that needed to get done, and nobody was picking up that ball and running with it. So with my experience of really being in the white nationalist movement for more than 30 years, as a brief bio for those who are not familiar with me. In my teens, I was a teenager and skinhead because my father was a Klansman, as were both of my grandparents. And even though as a teenager at that time, I had to kind of red pill myself about the JQ. Otherwise, I was racially conscious basically from birth. After I got over my teenage skinhead phase, I was a member of the Council of Conservative Citizens, and then graduated from that as I became more self-radicalized, because this was before the internet, mind you, into the National Alliance. And in 1994, I joined the National Alliance after having worked with them for a while. I had my bachelor's degree in history and political science and was a high school and junior high history and civics and geography teacher. And then I went back to grad school and finished my master's degree in history with a specialty in anthropology. And just after I had finished my master's degree, when I was looking for a job at a junior college teaching history, and I was the Arkansas State Coordinator for the National Alliance Internet Response Unit when the internet was still young, Dr. Pierce had Will Williams give me a call. And Will invited me to come up to the National Alliance April 2000 Leadership Conference. And so I did. And when I got there, Dr. Pierce had been told about the work I'd been doing online, activating and radicalizing people and mainstreaming our message and getting people organized to actually do in real life meetings, flyer distributions, and literature distributions, as well as building many local units in the state. And he asked me then to stay on in West Virginia at the National Alliance headquarters, and I did. And so I became Dr. William Pierce's membership coordinator for the last 2.5 years of his life and worked with him every day. And then we carried out demonstrations and protests and rallies growing in strength in York, Pennsylvania, and throughout Maryland and Delaware and in Georgia and Tennessee, all across the eastern United States, but especially in Washington, D.C. I first physically fought IRL, what we would call Antifa today, in front of the German embassy in Washington, D.C., where they broke my eye socket and split my face open with a tire tool. And that's video that's still floating around YouTube. We also held demonstrations in front of the Israeli embassy. And those demonstrations in front of the Israeli embassy grew in numbers as we allied with other skinhead organizations, with other nationalist groups, until eventually we outnumbered the ARA, the anti-racist, the Antifa, who came out against us, and we got nationwide and then worldwide media coverage, which was one of the primary purposes of those demonstrations and protests, to get the message out to more people. We held protests in conjunction with White Power music concerts, with the help of White Power music labels, and that increased the number of protesters we had coming to our side.
Mrs. and Mr. America fret. They huddle around their TV set. They worry and they sweat. They're thinking I'm the enemy, the one they need to get. Because their mind controllers tell them I'm a major threat. The talking heads, the daily press, they cultivate stupidity and harvest ignorance. They point a crooked finger and they're all unanimous by calling me extremist because I'm down on Zionists. So now I want to sing a new song. I want to be an extremist. I want to join a militia and wear camouflage. I want to be an extremist and run around and sing a rabble-rousing rebel song and sympathize with the skitties who realize it was the Germans wrong. I want to be an extremist. I want to get the job done.
And as those protests and rallies built, as the National Alliance grew, larger than it ever had before, with more activists and more units throughout the country than it ever had before, we were on a tremendous roll. Unfortunately, God had other things in mind. And Dr. William Pierce was struck down by cancer. And we held the last and the largest public demonstration of the National Alliance just a few weeks after he passed away, in August of 2002 at the U.S. Capitol. And at that time, that day, I led over 1,000 white nationalists from several different organizations to the U.S. Capitol. And those over 1,000 white nationalists were the largest gathering of white nationalists in our nation's capital since World War II. It still is the largest white nationalist gathering of this millennium. We've yet to eclipse it, but I would like for us to. I'd like to see that happen. I don't know when or where that will be. When Dr. Pierce died, there was a struggle for control of the National Alliance, and frankly, I lost because I was seen as being too radical. Even then, I was a purity spiraler. And so I came back to Arkansas from West Virginia, and I formed my own organization called White Revolution, which was an umbrella coalition organization of activists. And we held demonstrations all over the country, from the Alamo to Boston, from Phoenix to Ventura, California, to Florida, everywhere in between. Literally cannot even recall all the demonstrations of protest we did. We were very successful in getting more media attention for our people. And I have continued throughout my life for the last 30 years to be an activist for the white nationalist cause. It's all that I am and all that I do. I've ran for public office for the governorship of Arkansas as well as president of the United States in 2010 and 2012 respectively. And you can Google Billy Roper to read what the SPLC and the ADL have to say about me. They're not fans, all right? But that's good, because a curse by the devil is a blessing. And I am a Christian identist, a racially conscious Christian, and in future episodes, if you've not heard me do so before, I'll be happy to explain to you exactly what a Christian identist is and what we believe. But I work with other racially conscious white nationalists, regardless of their personal religious or political persuasions. I'm a national socialist, although, frankly, I would be just as comfortable with some healthy form of monarchism. It's more traditional, after all. But frankly, what I want to do is to encourage local group activism at a community grassroots level of white nationalist preppers and people who are willing to learn how, through the Shieldwall Network, to become persons of influence in their community. And I've written and had published 14 books, some nonfiction and some fiction, some science fiction and some historical fiction. The nonfiction books are sometimes more popular than the fiction books because I write about things that are very real to people. For example, my book, The Bulk, about the coming, inevitable breakup of the United States of America through Civil War and secession and through an abdication of federal power by the national government following a trigger crisis scenario which we cannot kick off ourselves We cannot speed up, and we cannot slow down. Just like those guys on the deck of the Titanic, looking at the tip of the iceberg. They couldn't slow the ship, they couldn't speed it up, and they couldn't steer it out of the way. But they saw it coming. We can see the tip of the iceberg. Now we can tell ourselves, like Nietzsche said, multiracial democracy cannot fly, and what cannot fly must fall. But we need to encourage the idea, the meme of balkanization and civil war and ethnic conflict. We need to continue to polarize the races against one another. Instead of working for unity, we need to work to promote division, to promote separation, to widen the gulf dividing America, red versus blue, urban versus rural, white versus black versus yellow versus brown. Because when America goes down, it's not going to break along party lines, folks. It's going to break along ethnic lines. And those internal migrations are creating the front lines, which will become the new borders of the new nations, which will be the successor states of the United States of America. And of the 14 books that I've had published, some of the fiction books also deal with this topic. My most popular trilogy, the Haste in the Day trilogy, which are made up of the first book that I actually published, Haste in the Day, Waiting for the Sun, and Wasting the Dawn, and they're also available through Amazon.com and Books and Nobles and Barnes Booksellers and Smashwords and on Lulu.com. It talks about the coming breakup and balkanization of America through a fictional prism, but one that's very easily recognizable. So I encourage you to find out more about the Haste in the Day trilogy by going to Amazon.com and looking up Haste in the Day by Billy Roper. And you can read the, I think, 56 customer reviews on Amazon of the book to find out more about it. And I encourage you to read it and to read the bulk. And to show you that I'm not being mercenary, if you'd like to email me at roper_billy@yahoo.com, I will happily answer any of your questions about the balkanization of America, which is coming, as well as the Shield Wall Network. But I'll also be happy to share with you a free ebook copy of the Balk, B-A-L-K, where you can read about the coming breakup of America. Then I encourage you to share it with others, because we are the watchmen on the wall, seeing the inevitable, irrevocably headed towards us. We don't know exactly when, but we know what. It's coming. So, balkanization being inevitable, some people have responded to this threat of the imminent breakup of the United States of America by trying to form PLEs, or Pioneer Little Europes, trying to get white nationalists to move to one region of the country or another. I have a great deal of respect for Harold Covington of the Northwest Imperative, and he has an intent to form a Northwest Republic there, and it may very well happen when America breaks up that there will be a white nation exactly where Mr. Covington wants there to be one and believes that there will be one. And there may be another white nation here in the Upper South, in my area of the Ozarks, where I live in a county that is 97% white, with a population density of less than 20 per square mile, and I am surrounded by adjacent counties with the same kind of demographics. It may be that there will be a white ethno-state in the Midwest, and maybe even in the Upper Northeast, in Maine and Vermont and New Hampshire and Connecticut. As I mentioned, there may be smaller ones in the Redneck Riviera or the Florida Panhandle. It may be that eventually we'll be able to wipe out, exterminate all the non-whites between us and rejoin all these white surviving enclaves, which will hold their mud, which will survive and hold their territory against the non-whites when America goes down. We may be able to combine all these ethnic enclaves again into one white nation a large white ethno-state, which could even absorb parts of Canada, because when America goes down, so will Canada. And Canada will also balkanize. But whether there ends up being one new America, one white nation, or several, as successor states to this multiracial empire, which is doomed to fall, I don't know. But I can tell you that the Shieldwall Network plan does not really require moving white nationalists to a specific white area, even though that is happening organically and healthily, not by white nationalists per se, but by just white people who don't want to live next door to blacks or Hispanics, even though they probably would use a euphemism to describe why they move. They move for the cleaner air or the lower crime or the better schools. That's a big one, right? They might not ever want to call themselves racist, but they are here, and that's what counts. They voted with their feet, and it's their DNA that matters more than their political acumen or their IQ. They are in New America already, and they're moving here every single day. In 1970, my parents did the same thing. They moved from Greenville, Mississippi, right at the height of the tail end of the Civil Rights Movement, when white people were being pulled out of their cars and beaten. They did a census research and discovered one of the wider areas of Arkansas, and they literally moved from Greenville, Mississippi to that area. That's why I am in Arkansas and not in Mississippi today, because my parents were some of the first PLE pioneers for the new white nation, and they did it about 50 years ago. More people are doing it today, whether they're calling it PLE or not. But you know what's even easier than building a PLE, a pioneer little Europe? You know what's even easier than getting people to move, to give up their jobs and all their friends, and to sell their houses and to go out someplace they have no idea where they're going to find a job there or who they're going to know? What's even easier than that is to teach people, like I'm doing with the Shieldwall Network and like we do every day, how to become persons of influence in their community. Now, this is something that, if you remember the movie American History X, and the nigger actually asked the protagonist towards the end of the movie, "What have you done in all this that has made your life better?" Well, we don't do what we do because it makes our life better. We do it because we actually believe in the 14 words. That we must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children. We do it for the 14 words, not to make our lives better. I could have been a mainstream college history professor and been much better off financially and had a lot less dramatic life. And that's true of most of the successful and intelligent people in the white nationalist movement. They're not in this out of greed. They're not in this because they couldn't have done something else. They're in this because they really care about our people. As I do, and as I know most of you do as well if you're listening to this podcast. And so we do this not because we want to make our life better, but let me sell you this, even though it sells itself. I don't even have to. When you get to become a person of influence in your community and you know your county judge and there's a hole in your road, you can get that hole patched more easily. When you become a person of influence in your community and your kid has trouble at school, if you know the school superintendent and you go to the school board meetings and you're a member of the PTA, then your kid's going to get treated better. That's just reality. If you become a person of influence in your community, and regardless of how well-known your political views are, if the local police know you, and they know you're not a terrorist or an outlaw, and you get pulled over for going 5 miles over the speed limit, you are less likely to get a ticket if they know you personally, and you are, once again, a person of influence in the community. If they see you at the civil court meetings and city council meetings, and they see you around town, if you volunteer for 4-H or for civic organizations or for local charities, if you become involved in your community and become a voice that's recognized and a person of influence, then that makes your life better. Now, in the present, we're not just sitting in our mountain refuge with some apocalyptic fantasy of America collapsing, and if it doesn't, then we're just going to be SOL. The Shieldwall Network is promoting actions which will make your life better today by helping you become a person of influence in your community. And then as you learn through our tutelage, how to go to local and county Republican meetings and Tea Party organization meetings and gun club meetings and go to shooting ranges and go to pawn shops and go to gun stores and get involved in your local NRA and veterans organizations. And then through those people that you meet in those meetings and at those organizational functions, you cherry pick the most radical and radicalize them further through the methods which we will teach you, so that they are the radical flank effect, which we also use, brought further right and closer to us, and that low-hanging fruit then become your own local Shieldwall Network franchise. And all of you will exponentially increase your energy by combining your strengths with theirs, your assets and resources with theirs locally. And then we'll teach you how to build that local franchise of the Shieldwall Network into a real force for good in your community.
Boy, baby. Boy, baby. Boy, baby. Boy, baby. Boy, baby. Boy, baby. Boy, baby.
Kill a commie for money. Kill a commie today. Kill a commie for money. Kill a commie today.
All these things make your life better now, no matter how long we have to wait for America to go down. Even if the shit hits the fan 10 years from now, in the meantime, it'll make your life better. You'll have safer neighborhoods and cleaner streets and better response from local government when you learn how to start a neighborhood watch. All of your neighbors will become your friends, and we'll teach you how to do that as well. So, this last weekend, we had a summer camp out. I'd like to tell you about the Shieldwall Network did, and 15 of us went camping for 3 days. A few more came by for the meeting Saturday night. It was a family-friendly event. The kids made s'mores by the fire and went swimming and river rafting and went hiking and had wildlife and plant identification classes, learned how to build campfires, make potable water in the wilderness. And as we explored the caves and the waterfalls and the rock formations in between swimming and the river rafting, they learned how to shoot bow and arrow. They had archery lessons, and they also went to the shooting range, learned firearm safety, and learned marksmanship using several different kinds of weapons, both handguns and long guns. We barbecued and cooked out, and played some acoustic guitar around the fire. But that's not all the Shieldwall Network is about. This last summer, we've held 3 demonstrations, 3 public protests, in alliance with the Knights Party and the League of the South and White Lives Matter and the ARS. We've held demonstrations against Sharia law. We've held demonstrations against a gay pride parade and a diversity fest allied with that gay pride parade. And we've crushed Antifa here in the state of Arkansas. Crushed them by doxing all their supporters and making them afraid to even come out in public. And then we held an anti-Antifa demonstration just to seal the deal. So we are political activists on a local level and on a statewide level. And we have allies because the Shieldwall Network is a part of the Confederate 28 Coalition of Organization. So we have allies that are part of the Blood and Honor American Division across this great country of ours, which was formerly a great nation and will be once again when it is New America. But as the Shieldwall Network works with their allies through Confederate 28 and through the Blood and Honor American Division across America, we teach our new Shieldwall Network affiliates and supporters how to become local grassroots community activists and persons of influence in their communities, working with whatever skill sets they have, building new ones, and networking with others who have different assets and different resources. Right now, we have a big charity called the Cover Our People with Love, pro-white charity. And you can find out more by going to the website. Just Google Cover Our People with Love or emailing roper_billy@yahoo.com. My wife runs it. Last winter, she donated over 100 hand-knitted winter caps in children and baby sizes because more of our people die from cold than from heat, as hot as it may be right now. This year, she's already created over 40 handmade quilts and blankets to be donated to white children in foster care and those who are taken out of abusive and neglectful homes, as well as for elderly in nursing homes. And you can get involved with the Cover Our People with Love pro-white charity by reaching out to us through mail at P.O. Box 1937, Mountain View, Arkansas, 72560. Our current project is there's a family in Virginia that has five children between the ages of 11 and just a few months old who've recently had to move out of the neighborhood they lived in because their kids were getting beaten up last year in school, and they had to move into a house that has higher rent, and now they are having trouble making the water bill and the electric bill. So we're collecting donations to help them with those summer bills. If you're able to help out, you can make a donation through PayPal to roper_billy@yahoo.com. That's PayPal to roper_billy@yahoo.com to help this needy white family with five young kids who are having trouble just making their electric bill and their water bill this month. Or you can send in that donation to P.O. Box 1937, Mountain View, Arkansas, 72560, to help the Cover Our People with Love pro-white charity. And you can Google Cover Our People with Love to find the website specific to that charity. So the Shield Wall Network is a coalition of white nationalist preppers and grassroots local community activists who would like your help, but it is not in competition with other organizations. Instead, the Shield Wall Network is a bridge between them and all of their individual members. The Shield Wall Network has members who are also members of the Knights Party and the League of the South, White Lives Matter, and Darien Renaissance Society, and other organizations, from Klan groups to skinhead groups. We honestly encourage you to get involved in an organization which will suit your own specific religious and political ideals. But at the same time, we encourage you to become persons of influence in your community through networking with the Shield Wall Network of white nationalist preppers and activists who are preparing for the inevitable coming Balkanization of America. So we'd like to ask you to go to shieldwallnetwork.wordpress.com. Once again, that's shieldwallnetwork.wordpress.com, and click on the What is the Shield Wall Network tab. You can also read about the Shield Wall Network Academic Scholarship and all of our upcoming events, including in September, the meeting we're having in Central Arkansas. But it's crucial that you understand the future of our people, the future of our new white America, the future of our new nation, our white ethnostate, is not going to be decided in Washington, D.C. It's going to be decided in each of our local communities by those of us who are willing to stand up and speak up and be leaders. Because ultimately, the number of people that we're able to get together to speak at a city council meeting when America goes down and say that we need to have volunteers man roadblocks at the county line to keep refugees from streaming out of the nearest city, the number of people that are willing to get to volunteer because we talk them into it, to rationing food from the local mega supermarket, the number of people that we're willing to get to form a local militia to defend our homes and our property and our families when there's no more federal government and perhaps no more state government to do that, that's going to be much more important than the number of likes we have on Facebook or the number of followers we have on Twitter, because the internet is not going to be there. So now, before the internet is gone, we need to act to meet each other IRL, in real life, face-to-face, and to build those bonds of trust and organic natural community, to know each other as friends, and to form Shield Wall Network franchises across the nation, across the country, across America, so that we will be ready and in place to work together for mutual aid and assistance when the time comes to bring about our new America. Until next time, this is Billy Roper for the Roper Report, Billy's Balkanization Broadcast, and Radio Aryan, reminding you as always to think racially, act locally, but no matter what, keep it white.
hear the student band. I think they're getting out of hand. Well, you know what happened to those who complain. We've got to stop them seeing light. Let them think it's all right. Cause the fireworks aren't to keep them entertained. Well, the wells have not run dry. Do we really need to lie? We'll say it's a national emergency. We're at a wedding full of clowns. And we'll kick them while they're down. Get the banks control, cause they are friends to me. Let's go and find a better place. We'll call it New America. Won't it be a lovely place to be? Imperial material, the mind of New America.
Listening to Radio Aryan for an alternative to the anti-white system on RadioAryan.com.